Sticks by Joan Bauer. Chapter 7. It's been 2 days since I mailed the letter. Buck is definitely getting better. I asked Mom if she figured out what's right for me yet. This is a mistake. Her face gets purple. Her green eyes go into little slits. She says when she's figured it out, she'll let me know. I'll be in college, probably. Arlen, Francine, and I are at table 17. Arlen's wearing his favorite t-shirt. It reads, "Are you gifted?" He's rubbing my shoulders like a boxing coach. "You're going to make it happen, champ, right? You're going to focus. Ram those balls into pockets. You can do it because you're the king. Let's hear the thunder break." I lean over the table to shoot and look over at table 15, where Buck Pender is knocking in balls with ease, stretching his long arms across the table. I think he got taller since his lesson. I put my stick down. "What?" Arlen asks. I wipe my nose. "I'm worried, okay?" "Not okay," Arlen says. "You think a mathematician starts thinking he can't finish a problem? You've got to think positive, Mickey." Big Earl Reed puts up the tournament poster in the window. "We're looking for the best, and that could be you." I walk up to the poster and touch the U. Buck heads out the door, looking like he eats cement for breakfast. Big Earl touches my shoulder. "World's full of bucks, Mickey V. One's too many. First one just helps you get ready for the others." "Yeah." Mrs. Wiggles said the same thing in school. Every battle the colonists fought in the American Revolution helped them get ready for the next one. That's why the best soldiers are the seasoned ones. Then she told us about a homework assignment that's due next month. We each have to pretend we're a soldier in the Revolutionary Army and write a letter home about our experiences in battle. "We can pick any battle," Mrs. Wiggles said, and passed a box around. We all took slips of paper that had our pretend soldier's name and rank. Mine said Lieutenant John Q. Milner. Arlen was mad. He only got a private first class. "Write your soldier's name down," Mrs. Wiggles said. "Just think about him for now." Arlen leans against the pool table and reaches into his book bag, which he hasn't lost for days. "A perfect 1-inch square cube," he says proudly, holding up a little cardboard box. "I finally got it right. With this, I can win." He takes out a bag of jelly beans, places a few in the cube. He shakes it, adds 2 more beans. Arlen is set on winning the jelly bean guessing contest at the mall and the $100 gift certificate. The sign in the mall said it's the biggest jelly bean display in America. "You're cheating," Francine says, picking up the cards. "The sign says to guess how many jelly beans are in the fish tank, Arlen, not figure it out to the square inch." "Mathematicians don't guess," he says, adding a final bean to the box. "Well, if you ask me, it's not fair. I guessed and won't tell how much. Maybe I'll win." Arlen empties the cube and counts the jelly beans. 13, he says. I write it down. "They're the exact same size as the ones at the mall." Francine touches her silver cross necklace. "Sister Immaculata says that God knows everything. That means God knows how many jelly beans are in the tank." Arlen says we have to go to the mall and measure the jelly bean guessing tank. This is one of those times that God isn't telling. Francine stands up fast. "I'm going home. A future nun can't be involved in anything dishonest." She pops the rubber band on her braces, grabs her mountain bike, which Poppy lets her keep inside the front door for safety, and heads out. Arlen holds up his 1-inch cube like it's a diamond. "We're going to be rich." Poppy drives us to the mall in her beat-up beige Rambler, which she says she bought when dinosaurs roamed the earth. The black vinyl seats are held together by duct tape, which nobody minds except Camille. Poppy doesn't like new things much. To her, everything needs to be broken in, including pool tables. Poppy says she'll meet us outside Perlman's World of Fashion and goes to Sears to buy herself a man's lumberjack shirt, since the one she's had for 12 years finally wore out. Arlen and I head for the jelly bean guessing tank, looking down as we walk past ladies' underwear. It took four store managers 2 hours to count all the beans. That's what the Cruxton Comet reported. Arlen takes out his tape measure and starts moving fast. Length, 20 inches. I write this down. Width, 12 inches. Arlen puts his tape measure over the side of the jelly bean guessing tank, making sure no one is looking. Depth, 10 inches. Glass thickness, 1/8 inch. Bottom thickness, 1/4 inch. Arlen snaps his tape measure shut. We walk out of Perlman's World of Fashion and sit on a bench in the mall. Arlen gets out his mechanical pencil and pocket calculator and starts figuring. Subtract 1/4 inch from length, depth, and width for glass and bottom thickness, he says. Multiply length, depth, and width together for volume. Multiply volume by 13 jelly beans, I remind him. For 29,414 jelly beans. He checks his numbers. I check his numbers. You've got it, I say. Without using the glass thickness, we would have been off by 1,786 beans. The paper that shows how he did it is awesome. Arlen's face starts glowing. We head back to the jelly bean guessing display. Would you boys like to take a guess? Asks the thin saleswoman. Arlen looks at the jelly bean guessing bowl like he's never seen it before. Go on, the woman says. Take a big guess now. Arlen touches his sunglasses. 29,414, ma'am. The woman takes a sidelong glance at Arlen and writes that down. And would you like to guess, dear? She asks me. Same, I say. Pardon? 29,414. That's what he said. We're partners, Arlen says. Chapter 8. Arlen seeing wood everywhere. He sees a stick on the ground and runs back to school to get his book bag. He sees a Jaworski lumber truck and heads back to wherever we were to get his jacket. Arlen says if this can happen, the world better watch out. Nothing is happening for me. It's been 5 days since I mailed the letter. I've been wondering if the post office lost my letter or they sent it to the wrong place and some guy is just sitting there laughing, reading my innermost thoughts. I'm separating laundry in the kitchen with Mom and Camille, putting the clothes that need ironing into Poppy's plastic basket. Poppy hates doing laundry and loves to iron. She's an ace at it, too. Poppy says anyone can do the laundry. Ironing takes a strong heart and skill. Mother, you've got to be kidding. Mom just told Camille that she has to start paying for the gas she uses in the car. That means Camille has to keep babysitting Rodney Huffington, who is 5 years old and tries to handcuff her to the refrigerator. Mother, Camille says, Rodney is going to injure me someday, I swear. We have insurance, Mom says. Everything costs money, Camille. I save every month for you and for Mickey's college education. This is how you can help. Mom holds up my favorite jeans, which got two more holes in the knees when Petey Pencastle shoved me off the gravel hill at recess. Mom, I blurt out, I've got to talk to you. It's so... The phone rings. Camille runs to answer it in case it's one of her potential boyfriends. Hello, she says with that little thing in her voice. Camille looks weird. Mom, it's for you. I shove as much popcorn in my mouth as it can hold from the bowl on the table. Camille winks at me and stretches the phone toward her. Joseph Alvarez. My body freezes. Mom's moving slowly to the phone. I'm making noises through the popcorn. She closes her eyes, takes a deep breath. Yes, she says flat into the phone. We'll surround her, Camille whispers to me. We'll move in close. Joseph, I appreciate that, but this isn't a good time for me. I'm trying to chew what's in my mouth, trying to suck on it. Anything to get it down my throat. I'm praying he'll keep on talking, saying something really smart that will... All right, Mom says into the phone. Go ahead. Please, God. Mom leans against the stove, listening. I'm trying to read her face. Camille pretends she has something to do by the stove. Mom gives her a dirty look and turns away. I know, Mom says to the phone. Know what? She's listening again for a long time. I finally swallow. Please, I shout. She throws up her hands. I grab some paper and write. Mickey Vernon, pool champion of the world. It's all in your hands now. I hold it up to her. She sighs deep. "You have to understand," she says into the phone, "that it was so hard here." I drop to my knees right in front of the stove and look like I'm praying. Camille's moving in behind her. Mom covers the receiver. "Do you two mind?" I'm lying on the kitchen floor now whispering, "Please, please." Mom's listening some more. Then she says, "Yes, Joseph, I've heard you." She sighed. "All right, goodbye." She turns to me. "That was quite a performance." I get up and brush myself off. "Sit down," she says, looking gray. Mom and I sit. "I meant Mickey." Mom gives Camille a little push out of the kitchen and leans against the stove, folding her arms. "I know how much you want Joseph to help you, and I'm sure I'd feel the same way if I were you. But there's something you need to know." "Okay." Mom brushes her bangs back like they're heavy. "You need to know that when your father was dying, he asked Joseph to look in on us from time to time, just to make sure we were okay. I'm sure your dad saw things in Joseph other people couldn't. He asked Joseph to get to know you and help you. I never felt comfortable about this because Joseph always had trouble staying around, but he promised left and right that he'd be here over and over for us. He wasn't." Mom steps toward me slow. "He moved out to Los Angeles after your dad died, which was certainly his right." Mom is looking at me all sad and worried. I hate it when she looks like this. She touches her head the way she does when she gets a headache. "Mickey, we're always honest with each other, right?" "Yeah." "I want you to know how much it bothers me that Joseph didn't fulfill his promise. He was your dad's best friend. He didn't call us. He didn't bother to write us once in 9 years. He just moved away, and now he's back. Nobody's perfect, and we need to try and forgive people when they're not. But I've got to tell you, Mickey, I don't know if Joseph is the kind of person you can count on." She takes a big breath. "I've known someone else like this. He never changed." "Who?" Mom sighs and sits down. I'm sitting at the table looking at the mud spot on my sneaker. "Are you going to ask him why he didn't call us?" "No." "I don't know how hard it was when Dad died. Camille said the hospital bills kept coming and the insurance wasn't enough. I'm thinking about Dad and how he trusted Joseph Alvarez to do the right thing. He doesn't seem like the guy you can't trust, but like Francine says, you never know about people." "I don't want you to get hurt," Mom is saying. "I don't want you to go blindly into working with someone whose history has been that he rarely stays and finishes the job. Are you ready to accept that?" "He might have changed," I say. "He might have," she agrees, "and he might not have." I swallow big. "I don't know what to do. Dad wanted him to help me. Dad taught him how to play. Isn't that important, too?" Mom shivers and pulls her robe tighter, but it can't cover the worry in her face. "Could I just try, Mom? If he hasn't changed, I'll blow it off, I swear." Mom closes her eyes for a long time. The leaky faucet's going again. Poppy keeps trying to fix it. "He said he'd be back in town on Saturday, Mickey. He has to go to Texas." "It's okay then?" "For now." Mom leans back. Her face looks beat. "But if I don't like what I see just once, and I mean once, I'm pulling the plug. If Joseph can't make it work, it's not because of you, Mickey. It's because of him."